the time for monitoring in Syria appears to be over. Yesterday, Norwegian General Robert Mood, who's heading up the UN monitoring mission there, said the side seemed intent on advancing military positions and he was suspending the monitoring mission. So where next for Syria? Well, this weekend, Egypt's overthrow of President Mubarak seems to hang in the balance. I've been discussing the situation in Syria with the Independent's Middle East expert and correspondent Robert Fisk, Russian expert at King's College London Anatole Levin, and Nicholas Van Dam, a former Dutch ambassador to Iraq, Lebanon and Egypt, and an expert on the Syrian Ba'ath Party. He's written a book on the subject. In a recent paper, Mr. Van Dam laid out three possible scenarios for Syria: a coup from within the Ba'ath Party, a managed transition, or all-out civil war. I began by asking him which future now seemed the most likely one.
Well, I think we're slipping off to a civilian, sectarian civil war, which is actually the most terrible scenario. So I think there's still a possibility, though not very easy, to have this internal Syrian dialogue for reform, to have this transfer of power peacefully, or to have even the Ba'ath people, some of them, participate in the next regime as an intermediate stage. But for that to happen, the international community, if there is any international community at all, should do its utmost best to communicate with the regime in Damascus. And since the last 15 months, the Western government and the United States, they didn't communicate with the regime. They just imposed sanctions and they took resolutions, some obligatory, some not. Thinking also that if you would have a resolution of the Security Council, that things on the ground there in Syria would really change. So I think we should do everything to communicate with the regime. I think Russia is one of the very few channels still possible. I think also the idea of communicating through Iran might be a possibility, because the alternative is so bad, bloodshed, damage for generations to come, perhaps hundreds of thousands of dead, spinning over, if it has not already, to Lebanon, Jordan. Iraq has already enough problems, perhaps Turkey. So we should also communicate with the opposition, the civil, both and military, and try to convince the people like the Free Syrian Army that the way they are acting now, of course, it's fully understandable, but it doesn't lead to a solution. So the key question remains how to end dictatorship so as to help Syria or the people to obtain their better future they deserve, but at the same time saving as many Syrian lives as possible.
Robert Fisk, over the border in Lebanon, obviously given the sectarian conflict, that's a danger in Syria. This is being watched keenly. What's the expectation from the likes of Hezbollah, with whom you would have contacts and with whom President Assad would be closely tied? What's the expectation in those circles of what the outcome will be?
Well, they've been extremely worried for obvious reasons, because their contact with Iran is always via Syria. Iranian weapons for Hezbollah come from Iran, over Turkey, via Aleppo in northern Syria and into Lebanon. But what Hezbollah have been learning, what a lot of us have, what I've been learning over the last few days in Beirut, is that there are clearly moves afoot, to use an old cliche, between the Americans, the Russians, the Gulf and Iran, to try and hold Syria in one piece. There are several elements behind this. One is the need of the Europeans to have some form of direct link to the gas and oil supplies of the Gulf via Jordan, Syria, the Mediterranean, or from Iran through southern Iraq, which of course is Shiite like Iran, through Syria to the Mediterranean. The Russians, according to the various sketches being put forward, would be guaranteed a role in the new Syria. They would be guaranteed continuation of their military naval facilities at Tartus on the Syria-Mediterranean coast, the only port they've got left in the Mediterranean after the fall of Libya, fall of Gaddafi's Libya. And of course, Iran would be guaranteed a say in the affairs of the Shiites, in a political say in Iraq, and also continued links with Hezbollah. Like all wonderful, clever plans, it may well fall to pieces, but that is now being talked about. And I spoke to a source very intimately involved in the past with Bashar's regime and now with a possible transition. And we went through together all these various ideas. And in fact, I know as a fact that two prominent EU ambassadors have actually passed a message on to Syria. that if such a scheme could be accepted, Bashar could stay for another 2 years at least.
The Russian regime, Anatoly Levin, how open is it to being, I suppose, convinced that pressure should be brought to bear on Syria? Nicholas Van Damme outlined there that Russia has the diplomatic dialogue monopoly at the moment, both with Iran and with Syria. Are Russia open, given that their hand is quite strong in influential terms? Are they open to being pressured by the international community at the G20 in Mexico at the end of this month?
Well, they don't like being pressured at all. And that's part of the problem. Russia feels that it's been pressured and in Libya taken for a ride far too often. But Moscow is quite amenable to the sort of settlement that Robert has just laid out. You know, the Russian government is not irredeemably tied to the existing, at least Assad, leadership. Of course, they but there are a number of you know, concerns. One is, of course, they hate the idea of unilateral Western intervention. They want to preserve their own stake and their own influence in Syria. They are very worried about the prospect of Saudi Arabia getting more power and influence in Syria, because the Russians see the Saudis as having laid the foundation for Sunni Islamist extremism in a number of parts of the world. Finally, though, the Russians are simply, I think, more sceptical than, or much more sceptical than, the West is in public, that anything will actually work. You know, they're fairly pessimistic about the chances of an agreement. And, you know, unfortunately, they may be right about that.
What's the danger of this spilling over? And at the point at which it threatens perhaps Lebanon, Robert Fisk, is that the point that we'll see outside powers saying enough and perhaps turning their minds more towards some form of intervention?
Well, it's certainly already in Assad's mind, that, and he's threatened that it could effectively spill over. Actually, it has. I mean, I've been in Tripoli, where there are gun battles of one kind or another every day or two, and dead between the Alawite Shiites of Jebel Mossin area of the northern Lebanese city of Tripoli, who are 60,000 strong, and the Sunni community, which is about 200,000 strong. So you have, in effect, in the city of Tripoli in northern Lebanon, Syria in miniature. But the impression I get is that the Lebanese will not tolerate another civil war. You know, we're dealing now with a generation that was away from Lebanon during the war, sent away for their safety, education, etc. Many of them have come back and are appalled at the sectarianism of their parents. And there is a strong element among Lebanese of saying, enough is enough, it's not going to happen here. I don't actually think it is. I think there's one other thing one needs to remember, and that is Assad is looking around for precedents that he can survive. Now, remember that the Algerian government had to fight a massive Islamist insurrection and crush them, with the help of Syrian advice, by the way, in the 1990s. And that Algerian government, le pouvoir, as the Algerians cynically call it, the FLN government, is still there. Now Assad is seeing that the Egyptian revolution is turning round, and it's quite possible that we're going to have a military state in Egypt succeeding Mubarak, and not totally inimical to the old Mubarak regime. So there are things around the Middle East, objects, symbols, which Assad can look at and say, well, Algerians brought it off, they survived, and look at the Mubarakites, you know, the supporters of Mubarak, they're still surviving. So why don't the Assads?
Anatoly Levin, the Russians say Sergei Lavrov was quoted in recent days as saying that talks about Syria post-Assad are not being held, they cannot be held, and that Russia will not get involved in overthrowing a regime. Can we take that sentiment at face value?
He said Russia will not get involved again in actually overthrowing a regime. He hasn't said that Russia will not engage in negotiations for a transition. I don't think it indicates by any means complete stonewalling on the Russian side. If Robert is right, and if there is any chance that the regime in Syria could imitate the Algerians and the Egyptians and hang on, well, Russia would certainly see that as preferable to an overthrow of that regime by forces including Sunni Islamist extremists linked to Saudi Arabia. Russia would see that as a very bad option indeed.
Nicholas Van Dam, Sergey Lavrov, when he was speaking, he was responding to remarks by Victoria Nuland of the State Department saying that Moscow were discussing just this. In the background, meanwhile, the Free Syrian Army are meeting Robert Ford, the former US ambassador to Syria. In terms of the end game in all of this, Russia must hedge its bets, presumably, and that stay in with the Assad regime while it's in their interest to do so, but also put its feelers out to what might succeed Assad. How will that play out?
I think most of us are always thinking according to a plan of wishful thinking, and this wishful thinking is, of course, that the whole Assad regime will disappear. But to have a transformation of the system is only working if the present regime or part of them will stay in part of it. One should not forget that there are many old people also, although I cannot give numbers, who are also supporting the regime. So I think in the end, by leading up or supporting a kind of dialogue in which both, I mean, the regime will not sign its own death warrant. They will not say, all right, we will negotiate with you our own downfall and then being executed. No, it doesn't work, except if they would be would have a safe passage outside. But having a safe passage outside would not just be the president and his entourage, but there are thousands of people constituting a network on which this regime is based. For the foreseeable future, they should be part of not just of negotiations ending themselves, but being inside in it, of not really the Ba'ath regime as such. They may still commemorate their 50 years in 9 months, but I think to have a dialogue is only practical if the regime has a stake in it, has something, has not to lose everything. So, and I think also the safety of the Alawi community should be guaranteed, or you cannot guarantee it, but the people should be put at ease, the people of the Alawite community, because there are many who are against this regime, but they feel linked to the regime because they are being threatened within the framework of a sectarian confrontation.
And that was Nicholas Van Dam, a former Dutch diplomat in the Middle East and expert on the Syrian Ba'ath Party, speaking to us earlier.
Now, at the time coming up to 2 o'clock, the latest news. People in Greece have been voting today in elections which could decide the country's future in the Eurozone. The main contenders have both promised to renegotiate the strict budget cuts agreed in return for two bailouts. The final mass of the 50th International Eucharistic Congress is getting underway in Croke Park in Dublin around now. The ceremony is expected to be attended by around 75,000 people, including President Michael D. Higgins and Taoiseach Enda Kenny. And a German chef has told RTE News that he's the man in CCTV footage viewed by the jury in the Michaela McAreevy murder trial on Friday. Speaking from Munich, Harald Heuer said if necessary he would travel to give evidence at the trial.
On the production team this week were Sinead Morris, Mark O'Flynn and on sound Peter Cheevers. The Week in Politics is on RTE television at 10:30 tonight. It'll be a special live programme bringing you the latest from the Greek elections. If you missed anything on the programme, you can go on the website and download a podcast. That's rte.ie. We're back at the same time next Sunday, but from Anne-Marie Green and from me, Colm O'Mungain, good afternoon and enjoy what's left of the weekend.